immigration activists are shoved, they're spit on. Donald Trump talks about paying the legal fees of those who are brought up on charges, most recently the man who sucker punched the African-American protester and then afterwards said into a camera of Inside Edition, next time I would kill him. And Donald Trump has offered to pay his legal fees.
Well, Donald Trump's pandering to the hatreds and violent instincts of some of his crowd is very alarming. But I think in a longer perspective, of we've had greater acts of violence than this during the civil rights campaign. People were shot, dogs were put on them, fire hoses were put on them, people were killed in the civil rights campaigns. And this is relatively small potatoes. I think it reveals a man of violent temperament and a dangerous person, but I think it's still on a relatively small scale. Mussolini and Hitler fought in the streets with the socialists and the communists, and they were dead. There were a few dead in Germany. There were actually more dead in Italy when Mussolini was sort of conquering the streets with his black shirts. That's real political violence. If Donald Trump puts his followers in colored shirts and they begin to fight in the streets, then you've got fascism.
Well, in this country, a deindustrialized America, the increasing, growing disparity between rich and poor, do you think a kind of foundation is being laid that he is playing on?
Well, I think there's a public that he's speaking to. In Italy after the First World War, there was a global depression. Everybody was worse off. In Germany in 1933, everybody was worse off. Now we've got this strange dichotomy of a few people doing incredibly well, amassing pharaonic wealth, and most people in the middle doing somewhat better, and a group of people doing worse, with stagnant wages, with job opportunities that limited to people with technical skills that poorly educated people don't have. So we've got a group of people who see the others getting ahead by leaps and bounds, and sometimes they think that black people are getting fair advantages to get ahead, and they're slipping behind. And so this is a very angry crowd of people.
Do you think Donald Trump is a danger to America, or represents a danger that's already here?
I think that his violent and aggressive temperament installed in the powers of the president of the United States is unpredictable and frightening.
You're an historian.
Yes.
But you're looking at politics today.
Yes. I think we don't know what he would do. We know that his temperament is such that we will have foreign policy crises that we shouldn't have, and we will have domestic conflicts that we shouldn't have.
I want to thank you very much for joining us, Professor Robert Paxton, Professor Emeritus of Social Science at Columbia University. His books include The Anatomy of Fascism. His recent piece is headlined as Fascism Back, and that does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Has three job openings: broadcast engineer, director of finance and operations, and director of development. Go to democracynow.org for more information. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Gaur Gadastinir. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Yeehaw! Thanks, Amy. That was rad. You're listening to 90.1 WUSB Stony Brook. That's on the FM dial. You can also stream at WUSB.FM. We also have playlists and a bunch of other stuff there. But without further ado, it's time for Off the Wall. Hope you're having fun. And stuff.
Thank you.
Yes, you're listening to Off the Wall with Emmanuel, and I'm Kyle, engineering here at the Norman Preslin Studios.
Well, there's nothing for me to say because you already introduced me.
I did introduce you because I know you're there.
Am I here? Yeah, I guess I am. Okay, well, here I am.
Yes.
Here we both are.
Yeah.
First live show in quite a while.
Yes.
Well, okay, so you were talking about the train in Austria. We have to pick up where we left off.
Yeah.
It ran out of time last week very quickly because I'm sick of this damn trip we took over a year ago. Train to Vienna from Budapest. It went on the tracks and got there and we arrived and any other memories?
Yeah, we just basically grabbed our bags. I really liked the station in Vienna and in Salzburg. Very modern, totally full of activity and just clean and sort of space age.
Yeah.
It really was amazing in Austria. I'd never really gotten to explore any of the cities and in some of my other travels in Europe. So that was a real treat.
Well, it's a very picturesque city as far as just the architecture and the lighting and it's a place where they put money into the things that are important.
Yeah.
And it shows. It really does.
We explored the streetcars, as I'm sure our listeners imagine. We've always got a curiosity for transit systems when we go places. So
we
that was
the Mozart Cafe, right? Wasn't that what it was
that's
called?
Very old, very famous dessert and coffee place. It reminded me a bit of like high tea at the Empress Hotel in Victoria, B.C., but it was a bit more...
Wait, you just threw that out there. Victoria, B.C.? I've never even been there.
Oh, it's nice.
Really?
They do a tea time at the Empress. And
I didn't know that. Okay.
I think it's the Empress Hotel in Victoria, but it's very similar, except this is the Mozart Cafe in Vienna. Amazing stuff. Amazing stuff. Fun trip. Recommend it, and we'll be back. We will go back.
Yeah, if nothing else, just to remember what it was we did last time we were there. And we are going to finish this right now because we have other things to talk about tonight. If I recall correctly, we stayed in Vienna for a little bit, just wandered around. I know Citizen 4 was playing in various theaters, and we were seeing it. It was really kind of cool to see.
Yeah, we saw it in the attraction, like the letterboards above the theater,
just in the streets of Vienna, which was cool. And there was also another incident involving
a
cafe,
the graffiti. Yeah,
graffiti. What was that again? I'm trying to remember what happened.
No homo.
Yeah, somebody wrote that on the cafe. The cafe did something. I thought the cafe did something bad, and they were condemned for it.
They had thrown some people out, and then
they threw people out for being gay. That's
right. It was you're not allowed if you're gay. So that's what happened. They were thrown out, we walked by. We wanted to see where this had taken place, and I do recall. I'll look it up, but I think basically some message had been scrawled on the side of this cafe, and it's an old stone building, It was something to the effect of no homophobia, which is...
Well, that's very different from no homo.
That was the attitude of the cafe.
Right,
that's
right.
What I was
so
saying.
They were closed down when we walked by there because I guess they were just in shame or something. I think they have recovered and have a more enlightened approach to their clientele and life goes on. Do you remember the guy... that was gaming the system of newspapers. There was this old guy who was figuring out a way to get money from newspapers that were being sold on the street.
I know. He had like a razor blade with him. Okay, I found the picture. It's smash homophobia. That's what was spray painted.
Hold the picture up to the microphone. That's
really, everybody can see.
Yeah.
There
you know,
it is.
We were playing a video just now. Democracy Now! Was a video. I mean, why are we playing video on the radio, folks?
That's a good photo. That's a good
smash homophobia. That's what the graffiti says.
That's what you get.
It's also it's multicolor. It's the smash is green
and homophobia is in purple.
That's right. How it should be. Okay, so the old guy. He must have been in his 80s.
Yeah, he was just this cantankerous kind of crabby looking guy, but he had a kind of a mosey about him, and he would go from these stationary newspaper kiosks that had a little coin catcher.
Yeah, people go and they set these things up all throughout the streets, and then they come and they collect the money.
Correct.
But this guy had a system, and it looked like he'd been doing it for a long time.
And I thought he had a razor blade of some kind, but he had some method of checking them to see if any coins had gotten stuck or something, or otherwise grabbing an extra euro or something.
And he was literally...
maybe from the bottom. I don't know how he did it.
Literally a couple of steps ahead of the much younger guy who was coming to collect the money. And he knew he had to stay in a particular place to avoid getting caught. And he was really nimble. I got to say, I was very impressed.
The industriousness was really a thrill. It was a sight to see. We really were taken aback at the refusal to retire from work, because life is work, you know, and you have to keep going. So, brilliant.
That's what he's doing. That was work.
He made his own job. Yeah.
Stealing money was work. I guess that's how he spent his life.
Can't help himself.
No, I suppose not.
He's honest.
Well, anyway, from there, we went to Strasbourg. That's been heavily documented. We did a couple of radio shows in Strasbourg, and we've talked about it. So other than saying Strasbourg is really, really nice, I don't think we need to say much more about that. And then from Strasbourg, we took that local train, which was also documented on these airwaves. Actually, we took three local trains. We got our rental car. I just want to say getting the rental car was a special kind of hell, because we thought it would be simple to pick it up at whatever that German city was that we wound up stopping in. We couldn't get the rental car at the train station. It was a mile or two down the road. I wound up walking to get it, and you stayed at the station. It took me about 2 hours to figure out how to get back to the station because of all the one-way streets and construction and various roundabouts and things like that. It was so frustrating. There were no navigational tools at my disposal, and I had no way of contacting you. So I was in tears, basically, when I finally found you. And it was incredibly annoying because it was like a bus station and a train station. I kept winding up in a mall. I kept winding up in a parking garage, and I couldn't get to where you were, and I couldn't leave the car anywhere. But we finally got the car, and then we drove it across Germany again to Brussels, which is where we found a we drove it to the border town by Belgium, and took I took a local train over because you were already in Brussels, and we found a discounted airfare back home. On an Indian airliner for like $150. That's it.
Indeed.
I don't remember anything about the airplane ride. A lot of Indian people on board.
A little turbulence on the way back in.
A little turbulence.
I was going to add some things, but you already wrapped it
no,
up.
No, go ahead.
No.
I was just spitting out what I had, and I'm empty now. So you go ahead and regurgitate whatever you have too.
I don't think it would be appropriate. Anyway, moving right along to our theme for the night.
We have a theme. Oh, boy.
Our show this evening, I'm really excited.
It's an abbreviated show.
Well, it is abbreviated, but our theme is thieves and liars.
Usually it's liars and thieves, but okay, fine. Thieves and liars.
Yeah. Thieving, all right. Thieving and lying.
We already talked about one thief.
There is a lot of that uh-huh. in the news right now, uh-huh. and we're curious. We've discussed this. We were in our planning meeting today for the show, and it came up.
I'm sorry again about spilling the wine.
I know.
I just woken up.
Such a waste.
Yeah, it was. It was good stuff, too.
And it has been in the news a lot. There has been a lot of discussion about lying. Who's lying? When, you know, the government's lying. Are we being lied to? Are we lying to the world? Is our leader a liar?
Is the world
is this
lying?
candidate a liar? Uh-huh. And thieving, a lot of stealing going on.
Uh huh.
People are stealing all kinds of things. Maybe not
anything and everything.
It's one of those everyday things, but it's been part of the accusations thrown around in a lot of the politics and global sort of issues. Thievery. Are we stealing minerals? Are we stealing land? Are we
stealing oil, resources, that kind of stuff. But also, it's an everyday thing that really bugs me. I mean, it's one thing, like, I think if you're wandering around an abandoned construction site and you find a full container of caulk.
Excuse me?
You can steal that caulk.
Wait. Hold on a second. All right, I'm still just barely awake here, but a container of what now?
Yeah, like liquid nails or some studs. Say you see some studs? On a construction site, and no one's using the studs and everything's done. You can take those studs, I think.
Okay, all right. Well, this is new information for me. I'm taking some notes.
I don't want to diverge. Yeah, everybody should be paying very careful attention.
I think they are now.
Intense meeting today. But okay, so that there's that, but then there's boosting, which is like going into a retail and actually stealing just because you can.
Because your friend gives you a boost up to the window?
Right, whatever. Boosting, stealing from your friends, stealing from loved ones. Maybe you're stealing time. Maybe you're stealing yourself away from the people that want you the most. There's so many ways we steal, and we're stolen from.
Wow.
If that's even a phrase. But it irks me. And, you know, bicycle thieves have a particular place. Well, a particular end.
Why are there so many damn bicycle thieves?
It's true. People who thieve bicycles, there's a recipe for them. It's bicycle thief pie.
Does it have cyanide in it? I hope so.
Mm-hmm. It's a variation.
Uh-huh.
That's a garnish. But my point is, thieving and stealing, is it okay? I mean, is it morally reprehensible for there to be liars in your life or in the world, in our government? Is lying okay?
Yes. I'm sorry. Answer so quickly, but yes.
If you lie every 7 minutes, uh-huh, is that better than lying every 3 minutes?
No. It's okay. Not a question of how often you lie. It's a question of how you lie, when you lie. Lying is not wrong. I talked about having wine at our meeting before. Maybe that's not true. Maybe it was actually scotch. Am I lying? Am I a horrible person? Or am I simply making it a more colorful dialogue by illustrating it with fiction? Is everybody who writes a book that's not true a liar? You know, if you lie to somebody you care about something important, that's bad. No question about it. You know, mm-hmm, but mm-hmm, if you say to an operator at the credit card company you call because they tell you that you have a suspicious transaction on your credit card, where it's something that you buy every damn month, and you tell them to have a nice day and you don't mean it, are you a liar? Well, yeah, I guess you are, but who cares? Doesn't matter. This person doesn't know who you are. Well, they do because they have all your information, but you know, they don't know who you are. And you can basically put on different personas depending on the situation.
Okay, so is there a universal way to measure lies? I mean, is that sort of what you're positing there?
Yeah, I suppose a lie meter or something of that nature. Something that indicates how serious the lie actually is. And if it actually is even a lie.
So how do we measure a lie?
How do we measure the truth? I mean, do you have to tell the truth all the time? I'm amazed by how many people tell social media everything about themselves. They always use their real name, their real address, their real everything, because they don't lie. But I think that's stupid. I think, you know, you should put out as much misinformation about yourself as possible, and that's how you preserve your privacy. And is privacy a form of lying, you know? Because you're not giving out all the information that's being requested of you.
What if someone finds out? What do you think of someone who might know that you lied to them?
Oh.
Does it matter that you are perceived as a liar.
Wait, hold, is this something that I did that you're going to hit me with all kinds of evidence about something I said to you that wasn't necessarily true? Am I being set up here? Because, you know, Kyle, I'm trying to think. I have tried to be as honest as I can. There are certain things that, yes, I have withheld, but it's in your best interest that I did that, and I was only looking out for you, all right? So, you know, please, go easy on me. I'm sweating bullets here right now. What could it be?
No, it... Whoa.
Hey, where's the disco music coming from?
We just got patched into disco.
Turn that damn disco music off, thanks.
We were using that.
The sports people are here. And, no, it's okay. We're not going to use that.
We're not going to
do... yank that, but we don't need any disco music in this place.
So, yeah. Because we're not using that, everybody, we are abbreviated tonight.
No, channel 8 is yours. You can have it.
It totally sounds like I'm doing that, doesn't it?
It does sound like you're setting me up for something.
No,
I'm
not
a little
at all.
Worried.
This is totally off the top of my head, actually.
Okay. All right.
But we are not going to be able to take your calls tonight. We have an abbreviated show. We won't be in delay. We won't be using the phones. But you can write us at otw@2600.com, and we'll possibly read what you write if it isn't filtered. Maybe even read it on the air a second time. So
sounds good.
But
yes, please continue.
In any event, is it? Do you care if people, like, if someone finds out that you lied, and whether you know it or not, when you lie, mm-hmm. there's a chance someone could realize you're a liar. Does that matter?
Yes. Well, it depends on the nature of it, on how important what you're talking about is. I mean, I've been caught lying a couple of times about things that kind of mattered, you know, where I said one thing to somebody and they, you know, and then something else to someone else, and then they talked to each other, and I felt kind of sleazy about that. You know, I'm not being honest with people. So that's the kind of thing you should try to avoid, things that, you know, where you're not being sincere to somebody. It's much easier to, if you think negatively of somebody, to simply withhold information rather than say something bad, that you're going to say something completely opposite to a different person. And if they talk, then you look, you know, very untrustworthy. There are ways of avoiding that. You don't have to. I mean, it's all a question of lying in one way or another way. Do you praise somebody that you think is doing something bad, or do you say something bad about somebody that you need to get along with? It's all a question of measure.
Yeah. And do you do it? Is there a pattern?
I hope
that,
not.
Because that can create a perception of your character.
Once you start lying,
pathological liar, someone who consistently lies. People who lie about, like, everybody I think has the grade school experience of the kid who told them just wild things that lied about everything, right? Or, I mean, you've had maybe coworkers or people that really exaggerated all kinds of, just oddly exaggerated, or badly. There are also people who are vague, who try to play dumb with you.
Yes.
Like, maybe you understand what's going on, and they think they can avoid you being a liar or being found to be a liar in one way or another, but you've really caught on. You know that in some way or another.
Okay. Yes. Well, as far as that goes, I suppose you're right about that. Are we working this over to get to Trump at some point, or is this are we avoiding talking about the elephant in the country, which is something that we need to talk about tonight, because it's what they call now Super Tuesday number 3, and that's where we really kind of get to the point of no return in this whole campaign. And I think the whole country is kind of holding its breath right at this moment. Is that sort of a tie-in to what we were discussing here?
Well, yeah, I was sort of getting at that. I'm sure a lot of people caught on. Anybody who's been paying attention to the news, I've had a couple things going on last couple weeks myself with deception and thievery and various things like that. It's definitely it's all around you, you know, in life. And I think it definitely has come to a head this week. We're really focused on that.
There were an odd number of spicy wings, okay? The fact that I took the odd one does not make me a liar or a thief. It makes me fast, I think. You know, everyone's looking out. Look, we don't have time to really get into the details of that. But I hear your point. I hear your point. It's all around us in various ways. You got to pick your battles. You got to pick your, you know, what's important to you. But I do want to, since we have an abbreviated show tonight, I do want to focus a bit on what's going on, what has been going on, because we haven't been live in a while.
Oh, certainly. Go ahead.
Wow. You know, we were talking about this whole Trump issue last year and how crazy it was then, and it's gotten even more crazy now. You know, if we had known what we know now then, we would not have believed that that's even possible, that we could be talking about what we're talking about tonight, which is basically Donald Trump could reach the point of no return with delegate counts. And the Republican Party is panicking, and rightfully so. I got to say, though, and I'm not lying when I say this, I kind of want him to win. I want him, not the presidency, God, no. I want him to win the nomination. Reason being, something that Marco Rubio said, and I rarely quote Marco Rubio, but he said that if we have Donald Trump as our nominee, the Republican Party will be destroyed. And I don't know, I kind of just like the sound of that, you know, that the Republican Party is going to be destroyed if Donald Trump, yeah, that it would destroy them, absolutely. In fact, they already may be destroyed by what has happened so far. I mean, watching the debates, we've seen every debate, and it's night and day watching the Republican debate where everybody is tearing into each other and literally having sixth grade level conversations of bravado and accusations. And then you go to the Democrats, and they're actually talking about policies, intelligent things. You feel like an adult watching that. They even agree with each other sometimes. They treat each other with respect, for the most part. And I like to think that there are enough people out there watching this that will see that and act upon that. But one thing that kind of gets me that I don't think enough people are focusing on. Yeah, we see what Donald Trump is doing week after week, month after month. We see the horrible things he says. And we see how he encourages all kinds of bad behavior, violence. Yes, he does encourage it. There's no question about it. Just watch his rallies, you'll see.
And then lies about it.
So that's why I thought that's where you were heading with the liar thing.
Oh yeah.
So he's a jerk. He's a bad person. There's no question about this. You know, ever since I saw him in the Home Alone sequel, I thought he was a bad person. You know, someone mentioned this on I think Twitter the other day, that, yeah, you know, even in that movie where he was supposedly not a bad guy, he's still a jerk. He sees a lost kid in New York City and doesn't tell anybody. Well, whatever. I'm over that. Thing is, we see Donald Trump doing this week after week. And yeah, it's disturbing that such a person is out there saying these things. What's more disturbing, though, is that there are millions and millions and millions of people who follow him and will vote for him. And even if he does get stopped one way or another, those people are still around. And there's an awful lot of them. And they're scary people. They're scary people. They're I don't want to say irrational people because no, they're rational. They're just their rationality is alien to me.
Well, they're convinced they're right.
Well, yeah, who isn't? But just the ultra nationalism, the hatred, the racism, the sexism—it's all there, and it's all there in one big neo-fascist package. It's something that we have to deal with, and I'm kind of glad we are dealing with it. When Chicago last Friday, we were watching this as it was unfolding. A Trump rally was canceled. He said postponed, but you know what? I don't think he's going to go back. Canceled because all these people were demonstrating against him inside the rally and outside the rally as well.
And breaking out into small scuffles and stuff as things were being cleared or rearranged in the confusion.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny how you watch the right-wing people on TV, they always say the same thing. They always say things like Hillary Clinton declared half the country as enemies. you know, when she said that, who does she consider enemies? Well, the, you know, Republican Party, obviously a lighthearted way of saying that that's the competition. But no, that means that she believes everybody, half the country is evil and she has to fight them to the death. They say things like that. They accuse people who hold up picket signs of being violent. And they try and flip things around, you know, calling people on the left wing racist or saying Bernie Sanders is sending his thugs into Trump rallies. The most ridiculous things, but they all fall into line and say this nonsense. And you talk about lying. Wow, that's the kind of lie that you could wind up sort of believing yourself because it's convenient. It gets your agenda across.
Yeah, and I think that's the the really fun part of this, the really fascinating part for me as a media scholar and a practitioner, it's about the message. It's about what we are disseminating into the consciousness and what kinds of things we're implying in images and signaling. And it is a plethora, a cacophony of meaning and allegiance and like divisiveness, mm-hmm. and nationalism and this sort of infusion with morality and value, like traditional values being sort of conflated and hijacked. Like, I think lying is a part of values, like morality, like my moral compass, how I was brought up influences how and when I lie,
mm-hmm.
if at all. And I think that should apply to everybody. I think a lot of people have all of these things they're so certain they're right about, but they're terribly compromised in other ways, like with honesty,
mm-hmm.
and that I think is a measure of how credible people should be perceived, how credibly people should be perceived. And I think if you're listening and you're getting sick of what you hear, speak up.
Yeah,
because that is kind of what's going to be counted on the next couple months, is people to not be active and not dissent some of the opinions flying around. And they are flying. This stuff is whirling about, people.
It is. And it's about time, too, though. And that's one thing I'm kind of happy for this, because I don't like things to stagnate. I prefer when there's lively debate going on and changes in the air. And that's one of the reasons why I support Sanders, because with Sanders, you have the feeling that some kind of a revolution is possible. When I say revolution, I don't mean, you know, fighting in the streets. I mean just rethinking the way we do things and changing our values to be more in line with progressive thinking. You know, things like universal health care, cheap or free tuition, better infrastructure, less world policing, things like that. So that's why I support him as a potential president. But by the same token, I also support Trump being in the race, because he will certainly inspire revolution too. It's just a different kind, a reaction to what he's doing. And we're seeing that now. We're seeing the beginning of that with people reacting to the crap that he spews.
It's burgeoning.
Yeah, and it's about time, because we've been sitting on our asses too long and letting things happen. We let 8 years of George W. Bush happen. How is that even possible? We did it, and we have to pay for it for a very, very long time. Let's not do that again. Let's speak up. Let's be loud. And I think that's one thing that 8 years of Obama has given us, is the ability to speak up a little bit and realize that, hey, we can move in a better direction. And I know, you know, a lot of liberal people will say, oh, but he didn't do this and that and that. You know, yeah, obviously he didn't do everything we want to do. He did some bad things. Pick a president that's not going to do that. You won't find any. But let's focus on the positive. Yeah, the positive that has come out of this. If you really believe that we would have been in the same place with 8 years of John McCain, there's nothing I can say to you. There's just no way I can reach you. I think if we use this this Trump thing going on, whatever it is, it's bizarre, I'll tell you that, as a springboard to something better, we can really make some progress with this. We really can. Right now, I see Republicans floundering and panicking, and got to tell you, it feels good.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's just cavalier enough to think that it's not that this backlash can play into his hand. Maybe for a second, maybe to some pundits, some people, you know, regulars on the talk shows and on the news cycle, but it is just getting started. And I welcome him. Mm-hmm. And everyone on the Republican side to the general election.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, that will be so much
fun. It's a little different.
But here's what I predict could happen. Not that will happen, but could happen. If Trump decides not to run, it's going to be because he doesn't need the hassle. You know what? I just thought about it, thought about my family, and I don't need this craziness. You know, let the politicians deal with it. I tried. I did my best. I'm proud of what I did. And you know what? If I had stayed in, I would have won. I would have, you know, the heavyweight wrestling spiel. That's really the only way I can see him leaving the race, other than something unpredictable happening and a lot of people defeating him in the weeks ahead. Tonight is key, though. Tonight is the night where a bunch of states vote, including Illinois and Ohio and Florida. If he gets those states, he's pretty much unstoppable as far as getting the nomination. So it's kind of it's going to be a nervous night, I think, for a lot of people.
Yes, he'll have to watch out for all the lead pies.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know exactly when. But anyway, we have to get out of here. I wanted to leave us, though, with a warning, with something that could be our future. It's a pro-Trump song from a southern rock band known as Laser Snake. It's called Make America Great Again. It's just everything you could possibly fear and dread and loathe. This could be something you hear a lot more of if you're not careful. This will take us right into the upcoming lacrosse game, I believe. So, any final words, Kyle?
Oh, no. I'm so glad we were able to express ourselves this evening, and I'm so thankful for WSB. Good night.
It's time for a change in the White House, y'all. Liberty. Bring it. If you want the real deal, then you gotta get a real leader. Want a real leader, then we need a real man. Build a wall, deal with all them terrorists. America needs a man that can. If you wanna feel safe in your own backyard, one choice, gotta play your Trump card. America.
like having the right to bear arms? Protect your family? What about the ability to work a job? Have jobs available to workers? You know who we need? His snake starts with a D and ends with a Trump.
Live from Laval Stadium, Matt Mankiewicz, Shale Henry, bringing you all the action here at WUSB Stony Brook and also on AmericaEast.tv. They take on the Hofstra Pride, and the matchup goes back a long time here, Shale Henry, but it's the first time these two have met since 2009. The rivalry, the Long Island rivalry, has been restored in other sports. Of course, men's basketball, most notable win against Hofstra this season. And now we get to see these guys go out again. A six-game series that has gone mostly in Hofstra's favor, but that was usually the earlier parts of it. It's been a lot more back and forth. There had been a lot more back and forth until it was stopped. And they've won on each other's home turf. The last three games are decided by one goal. The last Stony Brook win was back in 07 at Sherwood Stadium. An Owen Adams overtime goal made that a 13-12 victory. The last one went 12-11 in Hofstra's favor. So, traditionally, at least until when we last saw them together, two closely matched teams. And it doesn't really change all that much because guess what? Hofstra's ranked 12 and Stony Brook's ranked 13.
Yeah, Matt, Hofstra Stony Brook is just as big as a rivalry as Albany Stony Brook, and a lot of people seem to forget about that. Hofstra is Stony Brook's longtime Long Island rival, but looking beyond just this game, we have the 31st and 32nd picks of the Major League Lacrosse draft playing against each other in Shalon Rogers, who is the 32nd pick, who goes midi from Stony Brook, and Sam Linares, who's senior attackman for Hofstra. So expect a great game, but for this Hofstra team to start this season, they're on pace to win as much games as they won last season. Last season they went 5-9, they didn't have the best of seasons, but so far this team has been great so far. The first game of the season they went down to North Carolina and beat UNC, who's ranked fifth or sixth in the country, and they beat them 10-5 at home. Well, on the road if you're a Hofstra. So with this team, this players that they have who are capable of scoring points, creating opportunities for each other, it's going to be a fun game.
Well, the one thing that Stony Brook is getting these days is a lot of national attention simply because of what they did to Rutgers in a game that we broadcast together on Friday. Another closely matched, a couple of spots apart in the rankings game between Stony Brook and the Scarlet Knights, and it was all Rutgers for starters, and they got a couple of goals waved off, and Stony Brook took over from there. Final score, 15-6, and all of a sudden, this supposedly tough schedule that Stony Brook is on, because not only they have Rutgers, Hofstra, and Albany all in a row, and all within a week's time, all of a sudden, you see yourself, maybe we can sweep this. Maybe we can get something done here.
Yeah, but these are the kind of games that you want to play early in the season. towards the time when it comes to the American East tournament, that's when Stony Brook needs to play their best lacrosse. But right now, it's about, even though you don't want to drop games, even though you don't want to lose games, you want to get your team in a position to learn from the mistakes that you are going to make early on in the season and take that later down during tournament time.
As we said, it is a natural rivalry between these two schools. It is sometimes a bitter rivalry between the two, and doesn't just extend to what's going on the field. Oftentimes, administrators get into it as well. Jim Fiore, a Hofstra alum, he had a little bit of a falling out with the Hofstra administration over on the other end, and that's when the games were suspended. That's when we stopped playing each other, and I think much to the detriment of both, because instantly recognizable names on Long Island, lacrosse programs. Hofstra, I think, has the more established history, but Stony Brook on the rise in the past decade to match Hofstra. And also, in many ways, Hofstra was what Stony Brook aspired to be, and Stony Brook, in some cases, exceeded them. So it's no longer the young up-and-comer versus the established program. Now these two are right on, are on the same level, and now these two are competing for the same recruits. They are... The crowd is going to be pretty good here. It's going to be a balance between red and blue, just as it is over at Short. And, you know, people looking forward to this. People are really looking forward to seeing what these two teams can do to each other. And even though they never played in the same conference together, Hofstra was in the America East, left the America East to join the CAA. That allowed Stony Brook to go in. Hofstra, a couple years after that, regretted it because Stony Brook got the automatic qualifier the year they joined, and Hofstra, when they were in CAA, didn't have an automatic qualifier, and they were out of the tournament. So little things like that, a little back and forth, even when they weren't facing each other, kind of added to the rivalry here.
Yeah, but as we all know, Long Island is a lacrosse hotbed, so you want the two best teams in Long Island to face off against each other. It's going to be something for the fans and something for these players, because a lot of them grew up in this area. A lot of them actually probably faced each other in high school, so it might be a few familiar faces, but nonetheless, it's going to be a great game to watch.
It really is, and the captains are shaking hands at the Stony Brook logo, but let me give you some notes on what you're going to be seeing and what you have been seeing from the Stony Brook Seawolves so far this year. Well, first of all, Matt Schultz got Player of the Week because he matched his career high on Friday with 7 points, 4 goals and 3 assists. And as we were saying, when the final seconds of the first quarter were winding down in against Rutgers, Stony Brook had that last possession, and we both were saying they had to score on this one. They do. They get on the board, down 3-1 after one, and then they shut Rutgers out in the second quarter and end up with a lead at halftime. So, and then the third quarter, they just took off.
Yeah, that comeback from Stony Brook was mostly in part of that putback dunk, as I like to call it, from Matt Schultz, but was also by the second quarter play of Oliveri. Throughout the first half, it seemed that every shot that he was facing was going in. He wasn't that confident in front of goal, but he settled down in the second half. His team started picking up ground balls, getting down on the grid of the game, winning faceoffs. And after that goal and after the play of Oliveri, things started to settle down for the Seawolves, and they went up with a big win.
Now, through 55 games in their collegiate careers, Brody Eastwood actually has more goals than Jordan McBride. Now, everybody knows what Jordan McBride did. He scored 10 against Delaware. You know, the Batman Robin years, as Jeff Bernstein, who's in the building with us here, likes to call him, with Kevin Crowley and Jordan McBride. And Eastwood is chasing down that record. Jordan McBride has 175 goals lifetime. That's 10th all-time Division I history. And McBride is the only player in school history with 4 seasons of 40 or more. Brody Eastwood, like I said, is ahead of his pace and looking to establish a new record in scoring. And, of course, he and Shallon Rogers are on the Tuareton watch list, as we've been saying a lot of. Another thing about Eastwood is that against Fairfield, he didn't do a lot, okay? But he got his 3 goals against Rutgers. And you, and then Shallon Rogers, who did have a pretty good game against Fairfield, didn't really show up much on the scoreboard against Rutgers. That's been the Stony Brook offense. Yeah. You know, you shut one guy down, or one guy decides to be more of a point guard, be more of a passer, which is what Rogers did on Friday. There are other guys who pick up the slack.
Yeah, but on the topic of Rodgers, even though his name isn't showed up on the scoreboard, like you said, he has 12 assists so far this season. So that, even though he's not scoring, even though you're not hearing, he's not making a bunch of flashy plays on the field, he's doing what needs to get done for his team to win. But back to Brody Eastwood. Eastwood is 19 goals shy of breaking McBride's record. So, and again, like you said, earlier on the season, there's times when he wasn't as productive or he wasn't being found as much as the Seawolves wanted against Rutgers. It took towards that end of that second quarter and the second half for him to actually start getting it going. But against this Hofstra team today, for the Seawolves, you need to get Brody Eastwood going early and you need to give him some touches on the ball.
Absolutely. You know that's going to be part of the plan. Also, at the face-off X, they looked pretty good against Rutgers as well. But Hofstra's face-off specialist we'll be seeing a lot of as soon as we get past the national anthem here. We will be talking about that as well. As I said, very evenly matched teams, and Hofstra's scorers are to be reckoned with as well as Stony Brook's. But we're going to hand off to the PA, and we're going to step aside for the national anthem. Keep it here at Laval Stadium, here on 90.1 FM, WUSB Stony Brook. But as the Sharoff family scoreboard clock winds down, we will be ready with the pregame ritual here on the field turf here at Stony Brook. And as that winds down, here we go.
Gentlemen, at this time, we ask that you please rise and remove your caps as we honor America and those who protect our freedom with the playing of our national anthem. And now the starters for the visiting Hofstra Pride. Attackman, number 5, Sam Linares. Number 18, Trevor Kopecky. And number 42, Josh Byrne. Midfielders, number 25, Brendan Cavanaugh. Number 21, Corey Hendrickson. And number 22, Brian Von Bargen. Defenseman, number 27, Finn Sullivan. Number 50, Brett Osman. And number 15, Michael Diener. In goal, number 12, Jack Kincannon. Hofstra is coached by Seth Tierney, associate head coach Kevin Unterstein, and assistant coaches J.P. Brazell and John Gorman.
Big names all, Kevin Unterstein and
now,
twin brother Chris.
The starters for your Stony Brook Seawolves. Attackman. From Riverhead, New York, number 9, Ryan Bitzer. From Victoria, British Columbia, number 18, Brody Eastwood. And from Smithtown, New York, number 40, Matt Schultz. Midfielders from Purdy's, New York, number 7, Alex Corpolongo. From Coquitlam, British Columbia, number 23, Chalin Rogers. And from Oceanside, New York, number 34, Chris Hughes. Defenseman from East Meadow, New York, number 12, Dylan Curry. From Bayshore, New York, Number 22, Lucas Rock. From Mason, Ohio, number 44, Ben Randall. In goal for the Seawolves, from Ronkonkoma, New York, number 29, Zach Oliveri. Stony Brook is coached by Jim Nagel. He is assisted by Craig Gibson, Andrew Watkins, Jay Morrow, and Andrew Dorsey.
As the goalies shake hands and the players take their positions, we're ready to go here. At Laval Stadium, Matt Mankiewicz, Jale Henry on WSB Stony Brook, bringing you the first matchup between the Stony Brook Seawolves and the Hofstra Pride since 2009.
Chris Clark facing off for the Seawolves, number 10, Jay Lindsay.
Both better than 50% faceoff averages. As the referees set up the sticks, they drop the ball in place. And we are underway. The ball will kick towards Stony Brook territory. It'll be picked up by Hofstra on the wing. And they are ready to go on the offensive sequence. So they actually bring it back to their own territory. Gets Concannon, the goalie. And completely clear, Brian Von Bargen, he'll take it in to Stony Brook territory. Stop at the right elbow. And we see the midfielders in action. Getting a touch for the first time, Brendan Cavanaugh. They work out to the right wing. And coming through the X is Josh Byrne. Josh Byrne, leading goal scorer for the Hofstra Pride. He's got 16 on the year. As they work around counterclockwise, back up to the top now. That's Cavanaugh. Cavanaugh driving. Cavanaugh stopping, right goal line extended. Back to the X. As we see Capecchi come around to the left wing and bring it back up to the top now. Getting a touch, Von Bargen. Von Bargen going to his right. Once again, that's Cavanaugh. Cavanaugh looking to drive, goes to his left. They come back to the X to Byrne. Byrne come around, goal line extended. Gets tripped up. There's a flag. No, that was the ball. They get back to the left wing and inverting, coming around Cavanaugh. Cavanaugh quickly dumps off to Capecchi. Capecchi comes back goal line extended, down low, and the shot is blocked. Picked up briefly by a Hofstra player, loose. Let's see if Lucas Rock can get a stick on it. He did, and came right back to Ben Randall of Stony Brook. He gets the ground ball.
Yeah, the battle for the ground balls is going to be one of the biggest factors in this game. Hofstra's ground ball specialist so far, he's won 62% of his face-offs. And the battle on the loose balls as well. Stony Brook needs to pick up loose balls. They need to win this game in the grit and in trenches of this field. And when it all comes down to it, let's see how the Seawolves play under pressure and when they're not able to get the shots that they want.
So we see the midfielders in action. Hughes has it right now. He'll drive straight down the slot, make a right turn, come around to the X. That's Bitzer. Out to the front to Rogers. Now top Corpolongo. Corpolongo down low to Schultz, and his shot on goal is compromised. So you've gotten away on the Hofstra side. That's number 50. That's Brett Osmond, the D for Miller Place. A stone's throw away from here, almost literally, as the Seawolves midfielders are back in action. Hughes drives. Hughes stops goal line extended. Kicks it back out to Rogers and out to the left side, Corpolongo. Corpolongo takes a line drive shot. He scores, and the Seawolves are on the board. Overhand, bottom half of the net. Seawolves lead at 1-0.
Great shot by Corpolongo. He's been doing this all season for the Seawolves, and Stony Brook is on board first against Hofstra 1-0.
So at the 12:14 mark of the first quarter, the Seawolves get on the board against the Hofstra Pride. First goal scored between these two schools, and yes, that's right. 7 years, almost. This was usually a late season matchup. Oftentimes, the Seawolves would get Hofstra on a Tuesday like this and Albany on Saturday, which they do this week, but usually that was the last game of the regular season before the playoffs. Clean win for Lindsay. He's going to go. He's going to drive. He's going to take it himself and hits the crossbar. Long rebound goes half the field. Goes out of bounds. Hofstra should take it there.
Unassisted goal at 12-14 in the first quarter. Stony Brook leads 1-0.
The Seawolves must have caught the Golden State game last night because they're pretty trigger happy today, during today versus Hofstra.
Well, you know what? They're getting a lot of hype. The Stony Brook is known to be a high-scoring team, and not only that, as we were saying the other night against Rutgers, accurate shooting too.
Yeah, but we didn't see a lot of those shots until the second half last game against Hofstra, but because, now they just let it all rip.
Well, because Rutgers kept the ball away from them for so long too. Now Hofstra on the attack as nice little dodge there taken by Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh now drawing a double team, has to kick it back out to the top and out to the right side. Von Bargen has it right now. And he takes a shot, and that's a nice save for Oliveri. And Oliveri, as you said, shut down Rutgers in the second quarter, and he is still the first half goalie. And what Jim Nagel has been doing all season long is he'll play Oliveri in the first half and Brandon Macheski in the second half.
Yeah, but it's good to see Oliveri make a save so early in the game. Last game, it took him until the second quarter to actually settle down. So for the Seawolves so far, their shots are hitting where it should hit, and your goalkeeper's making saves. Two aspects of their game that you need to win.
Mark Ellis getting in on the action for the Seawolves in the Hofstra zone. Now Rogers has it at the left elbow. Rogers holding on. Playing catch a little bit with Bitzer on the left wing, and now we see a new face, or McLean Chiquin. Not exactly a new face, but his first touch of the day. He comes out goal line extended through to Schultz, now to Rogers, back up to the top, once again to Hughes. Hughes left-handed, now going down the wing again to Schultz. Schultz hanging out at the X. Schultz coming back to Rogers up top on the right side. Now once again, Chiquin. Chiquin. His teammates do call him Chicken. Now Hughes has it on the right side. Through the midfielders once again, out to Chiquin on the left. Coming around to Schultz in the far corner. Schultz coming directly behind the net. Coming back out to Bitzer, and again back through the midfielders as Rogers has it at the top of the slot. He's looking to drive. Makes a bit of a right turn. Kicking back out to the top once again, Chiquin. A couple of steps out to Hughes on the left. Back to Chiquin right at the top of the slot. Chiquin driving again. This time back to Bitzer at the X. Coming out now, Schultz driving. Schultz trying to lose his defender. Back out to the top again, Rogers. Rogers, trying to gain down low, and Bitzer had a nice opportunity there, but standing right in front of him was Brett Osmond, the defender, but the Seawolves recover at the end line.
That was a great needle pass by Schultz on that play. I actually wanted to see that one go in.
9:05 left in the first. Stony Brook 1-0 lead, second possession of the game, and it's a long one. Chiquin back out to Rogers. Rogers, left side of the slot. Now he's in the slot, going down low, and Bitzer again. But the rebound comes right back to Brody Eastwood. He puts the Seawolves on the board. It's 2-0.
And Brody Eastwood, he's always creeping around the crease of the goal. He's always ready for those rebound shots. He's been doing it his entire career, and he does it right now. One more time for the Seawolves.
So the Seawolves open up a 2-0 lead on the Hofstra Pride inside the 9-minute mark. And guys like Brody Eastwood, guys who hang out right at the net and pick up the garbage. You remember from the Mighty Ducks movies.
Yeah,
but garbage can't just shoot garbage, and the defenseman have to clear it away.
I was watching March Madness. Well, not March Madness, but toward the end of the tournaments of college basketball this weekend, and then it was a Kentucky game. And then the coach, Coach Calipari, said that, guys, you need to get...
Bitzer takes a shot, bounce shot up and over the crossbar. Seawolves will get it back.
And he said, guys, we need to get rebounds. That's how we're going to win the game. We need to get rebounds. And last game against Rutgers, you saw when... Schultz picked up that rebound and put it in. He changed the momentum of the game. Right now you see Brody Eastwood picks up the ball on the crease, puts the rebound in, and these loose balls, these extra plays, like these are the ways that you win games.
Little tip for people who are filling out their bracket or have locked it in already. Stony Brook's a better rebounding team than Kentucky, just saying. Alex Corpolongo, left side of the net. Coming through to Bitzer, directly behind. Bitzer looking for a wraparound. No, feed down low. Schultz! He scores, and that was a low pass. He had to recover that and jam it in. 3-0 Stony Brook.
Seawolves are rolling early in this game. I didn't see this result so early, and it seems Hauster has no response.
They haven't had the ball. That's a big part of the problem.
But then that's something that you wouldn't expect from this Hauster team, because they've been great with ground balls and on face-offs this entire season. So let's see if they can settle down. Probably this rivalry and playing against Stony Brook at home is getting to them, but we'll see if they settle down, if they can pick up some ground balls and get some possessions going.
The Seawolves can put a big crooked number up on the board pretty quickly as Lindsay and Clark go at it at the SB logo.
And another Stony Brook ground ball, face-off win.
That was, and Lindsay got that one. Jeff Ray takes it in. Tried a one-time attempted by Bitzer, but the loose ball picked up again by Eastwood. What a play!
Hashtag SC Top 10. Wow.
Oh, man! Let's rewind it, because loose ball picked up in front of the net. Out to Schultz, cross the front of the net, and the Seawolves make it 4-0. And, yeah, Hofstra has to get things under control pretty quickly here. And they're replaying it for everybody just so.
Well.
And a little bit of a pump fake there, too.
Stony Brook men's basketball isn't the only team at Stony Brook making highlight reel plays.
But Jeff Ray, wow. Jeff Ray started that play, and he finished it. Shoulder to shoulder on the face-off. Ball loose, now picked up by Hauster, and knocked free again.
That's the second straight time that Hauster's touched the ball and has been knocked away. The turnover has been forced by a Stormberg player.
Rylan Rees poked it away.
At 7:43 in the first quarter, Stony Brook leads 4-0.
Hauster's not playing like a team who's ranked 12th in the country right now.
Hey, neither did Rutgers. But now, going with long sticks and, yeah, timeout taken, because that was not a position Jim Nagel wanted a long stick to be in particular Ben Randall. Let's pull back. Let's organize this thing a little bit and keep the momentum going, because when you're throwing the ball around, people aren't supposed to be in those positions. You can turn it over pretty quickly, and momentum could change.
Yeah, Stormer's been forcing turnovers. They've been grabbing loose balls. They've been making all the little plays that they need to make to win this game. And it's still early, but Hauster needed that timeout. It's kind of like when you're watching a basketball game, and then one team, they're going on a run, and then you end that run with that one highlight reel dunk. That's what that last goal was.
Yeah.
Hauster needed that timeout.
But they didn't call it. Stony Brook did, so they have one remaining in the half.
Offers full business and social services coupled with helpful on-site event managers. Islandia Marriott Long Island. Beyond your expectations.